Thank you, Tim, for the introduction. So, and also thank you for the invitation so that I have this chance to give you this pretty exciting new result that we discovered recently. So there's actually a pretty cool name that's starting to emerge called I'm gonna tell you about today. It's about the quantum many-body scar states. So before I tell you our result, that I'll just fill in you in about some backgrounds. So the general problem that people have been asking is that how can an isolated quantum system become thermal, or how does an isolated quantum thermalizes? The reason is that imagine that if you prepare an initial state, and then of course that you can think of your initial ensemble just as this kid and then times the bra, and then under the unitary evolution, there's never a way that you can get a pure state become a mixed state. For example, your Gibbs ensemble is a mixed state. So how is that even possible? So actually, it turns out that it's a too strong restriction. You don't really need a whole ensemble to become Gibbs ensemble. All you really need is that when you measure some local observables, their values agree. So for example, that now consider that I prepare an initial state. Under the unitary evolution, then this is how you write out your evolution expectation value as a function of some time. So if you decompose this into the eigenstate of your Hamiltonian, then you have a part that doesn't change with time, and then this is the diagonal part, and also you have another part that changes with time. This is the off-diagonal part. So right now, that let's assume that because typically that if you have a many-body system, then all the eigenstates are they're basically having exponential separations. So all these terms are adding up, and then they just deface very quickly. Or if you don't really like this assumption, then you can basically just take the long-time average of this thing. Then what you will get is that the expectation value of some local observable in the long time, basically infinite time, will become this thing. So the question about thermalization is that how is it possible that this thing is equal to your prediction from your thermal ensemble? For example, you can take your favorite thermal ensemble, microcanonical ensemble, or canonical ensemble. And recently, these two decades, there's this hypothesis emerges trying to make this possible. So this is the so-called eigenstate thermalization hypothesis. So basically, the essence of the hypothesis basically states that most of the in what's happening in the generic or thermalizing system is that when you evaluate your local operators, the expectation value of any eigenstate, then in thermodynamic limit they actually converges to a smooth function, and then that smooth function only depends on your energy or energy density actually. So in that case, actually, you can imagine that right now this is just in thermodynamic limit. This is just a function, function of E, and then you can take this out at the same energy density, and then whatever the ensemble that you have, whether it's this initial ensemble, the jargon is actually diagonal ensemble, or microcanonical ensemble, or canonical ensemble, or any distribution as long as they have the same energy density and convergent energy fluctuation, they will all give you the same expectation value. So that's actually that's basically the essence of eigenstate thermalization hypothesis. And there's actually a version. This part that right now nowadays people also call them diagonal eigenstate thermalization hypothesis, and we'll talk about off diagonal later. There's actually a version called the strong eigenstate thermalization hypothesis. So basically, you can imagine that if you want to say that all the initial state thermalizes, then I can take a very extreme example that my initial state is just some eigenstate. Okay, even though it's not really moving with time, but we can still talk about, okay, is it thermal or not? So if you take just one eigenstate, then if ETH holds, then you have to conclude that locally, it looks like you're just evaluating from the grand canonical ensemble if ETH is true. Okay, so let me just rephrase this again. So for strong ETH, you have to require this for every eigenstate. So there are actually some consequences about ETH. For example, that any eigen for ETH systems, the eigenstate at finite energy densities, the eigenstates at nearby energy density are locally indistinguishable because basically they all give you the same result for any local observables. And also that the eigenstate will scale as volume law. The entanglement entropy will scale as volume law. Rough reason is that if you look locally, it should be looking like a Gibbs ensemble. So the reduced density matrix looks like a Gibbs ensemble. And then we know Gibbs ensemble scales as the volume, the entanglement entropy of that will actually corresponding to the thermodynamic entropy of the Gibbs ensemble, and then that scales as volume law. There are actually lots of the references regarding ETH, but I'm just quoting these two because this is the first one that addressed about the issue of strong ETH. They really check numerically that there are some models that all the eigenstates are satisfying ETH. And then the second one, they basically show that numerically that you can just take one eigenstate, and then that is already good enough for your description of, say, Gibbs ensemble. So I'll just talk a little bit more about the dynamics or off-diagonal ETH. So remember that, the ETH was about the assumption in the diagonal part, but people also developed some of the phenomenological understanding about the behavior of those eigenstates. So those eigenstates, actually, if you only probe the property locally, then they behave as if that they are just drawing from some random matrix theorem. In the sense that, if you have an eigenstate, then you operate that with some local operators, then the overlap of that resulting eigenstate with other eigenstate will behave as if that it's a random number. And since this is a random number, and then everything is just adding up very quickly, so that's why another piece of ETH is basically saying that all the things should deface very quickly. So there's no special frequency E1 minus E2. And so that if you really want more mathematical answers, then this part is what people this part is the off-diagonal ETH that people usually said. So actually there's another pretty important difference between the usual sense about thermalization. So classically, you really, classically, you really need to take long time average, but classically, you really need to take a long time average of the observable. But actually, ETH says that you don't even need to take long time average. So if this part satisfies off diagonal ETH, then everything should just deface and then approach thermal value very quickly. So. Also, just give you some flavor about some example about ETH behavior and non-ETH behavior. So for example, there was a ITBD simulation work done by the group here. So what they did is that they studied this Hamiltonian, and then they chose the parameters such that the level spacing statistics shows Wigner-Dyson. So it's a chaotic system in that metric. When you prepare your initial state pointing in all the Y positive direction, then you actually see that the three observables that they calculated, basically the magnetization direction, they just deface very quickly and then approach the thermal value. But when you prepare the initial state in spin all pointing to the Z plus direction, they actually see some strong oscillations, and then seems like up to the time they could simulate, it seems like they're not really equilibrating. So this is some ETH behavior that you should expect, but this is something that you shouldn't expect for ETH systems. But it turns out that the reason why it shows some weird thing like this is because that this Z plus state is actually corresponding to some low energy part of the spectrum. So effectively that The system at that part has some quasi-particle description. And then so actually Lessig and I had some explanation to explain why you see some strong oscillation like this, right? But when you prepare your initial state in the Y plus part, then it's actually probing the, say, infinite temperature of the spectrum or the middle part of the spectrum. And then that part of the spectrum actually behaves very well, like ETH is satisfying very well. So that's why you actually see this expected ETH behavior. And also there are also, people also already know, so for instance, that in the same model but different region, that there are actually some proposed dynamics that are proposed by Martin Kormos and Pasquale Calabrese and the companies, that they have some protocol that you can dynamically detect some of the quote-unquote meson states, and those are actually the confined domain walls. And then there's a group of people led by Neil Robinson in Netherlands. They really use some method trying to obtain the low energy part of the eigenstate. And then they did see those meson eigenstate. And then they, for example, they can calculate their physical property. For example, the entanglement entropy is scaling as area law. But the important thing is that these special things are really just happening at the low energy part of the spectrum. So it's still hard to argue if these things survive into, say, finite energy density, which is really the part that when you're talking about thermalization or ETH, that's the part that we're worrying about. Yes?
What was the observable?
In this case, they measured some correlation functions, it's a spin chain. I guess the easiest thing you can think about is just some magnetization thing. And they also measure some correlation function, and then they saw the correlation function is not spreading out. They could actually see those quote-unquote meson states like bouncing back. Yeah.
But sorry, but doesn't the Z plus state also have finite energy density?
This one?
Yeah, initial state.
Yes, actually, thank you. Yeah, it does, but it's still at the low energy part. So actually what we saw is that what we did is that actually using ED, we can reproduce the result for up to even like 15 for L equals to 18. So we could use the exact normalization to understand what's happening for infinite system size. So even though it's finite energy density, but it's still relatively low temperature. So you still have the notion of quasi-particles, but the quasi-particles are dilute, so you still see the dynamics there. But the conclusion we had is that those should be just finite time effect, meaning that in the long time, it should still thermalize. It's just that you're probing low energy part, and then those quasi-particle signature are there at finite time. Yeah. Yes?
Do you discuss at all whether ETH holds that is for that?
Sorry?
At this energy, does ETH hold or not?
So it's very hard to do ETH analysis here because in the middle part of the spectrum, you have exponentially many states. So the statistic is good it's easier to analysis. But if you're only looking at the low energy part, say if you do L equals to 18 ED, then there's probably like only 100 states that's at the right energy window you want to talk about it. That's very hard to do ETH analysis. So usually people do ETH analysis. They actually throw out those low energy or high energy part of the spectrum. They only did the analysis in the middle. Yeah.
Really good question. If I crank up HX, should this be gone?
Should which one?
Yes.
Actually in their appendix that they. For example, they also calculate 1.5, then actually you see some decay. Yeah. Okay, I'll keep going. So so this is the paradigm that people have been knowing these two decades, basically just eigenstate thermalization hypothesis. So all the eigenstates are thermal. And there's actually an extreme different paradigm, so-called many-body localization or integrable models. So basically, in this case, because you have a macroscopic emergent conserved quantities, so all the eigenstate can be labeled by those quantities. So all the eigenstate are not thermal. right? So there has been lots of people trying to think about, okay, is there any possibility in between? So there were different proposals like asymptotic many-body localizations or quantum disentangled liquid proposed by Tarun Gruver and Matthew Fisher in UCSB. So there are actually lots of the proposals, but recently that it's actually kind of surprising that there are actually systems that right now we call many-body quantum many-body scar states. So in this case, that there's actually a scenario that most of the eigenstates satisfying ETH, but some of the eigenstates, say order one or order L of the eigenstates, they actually don't satisfy ETH. So that's actually a pretty exciting recent discoveries from both actual experiments and theoretical results. So, yes?
I'm sorry, isn't a continuous regime or a discrete regime?
No, we're still right now talking about lattice systems.
No. I'm saying that the spectrum when you have quantum body localization.
Right, so we can prove, at least the two systems we know that we know they are states that doesn't satisfy ETH in thermodynamic limit. By continuum, what do you mean by continuum?
The spectrum of the Hilbert
will become continuum in thermodynamic limit, right?
Yes, but which part of the states will be?
So there will be an eigenstate or a few of the eigenstate. You can analytically write down, and then so you can talk about that in any system size, including thermodynamic limit. Yeah. I probably don't understand your question. No, it's okay. Oh, we can probably talk more. Yeah. Right. So, let me just give you my definition, or at least for now in this talk, that what do I mean by scar states? But as I just explained that, by scar states I mean those special eigenstates in the middle of the many-body spectrum that's non-thermal, while other eigenstates are thermal. Okay, so I can give you some of my personal way trying to convince, because I didn't invent this term. I'm just trying to give you some of the idea about why I think that's a convince me why is that an okay thing. So actually, in the 90s, people already talk about some of the single particle scar wave functions. So for example, actually in the classical mechanics, we know that in stadium billiards, when you prepare your initial particle shooting in some random directions, then after some short time, that it will actually go through all the area. But when you tune your initial state right, it actually follows some closed orbits. So there's actually some trajectory that follows a closed orbit. And if you think about this problem as a quantum particle, what you do is that you so this is a kinetic energy up to some minus sign, and you trying to find the wave function of this single particle. So, and then you can use this, actually you can do this using MATLAB or something. And then if you look at the eigen wave function at say, I don't know, like number 4,000 or something, and then you, and this is the plot that of the amplitude of the eigen wave function. Some kind of equal height amplitude, equal height graph of that. And most of likely that you'll find the eigenstates there spreading all over the area. So that's why, so those wave functions are ergodic. However, occasionally that you will actually find some eigen wave functions that's more concentrated on some part of the area, some part of the area. For example, in this figure, I don't know if you can see that, it's actually concentrating on the classical trajectory, the corresponding classical trajectories. So in this case, that the analogy I'm trying to draw is that in the single particle, you obtain a single particle spectrum. Most of them are ergodic, but some of them are actually non-chaotic or non-ergodic. And those are actually in the context that people in the 90s already say that, oh, those are the single particle scar states. So the question here is right now, what about many-body systems? Yes?
Is it clear that the distinctions is sharp?
The distinctions?
Or it's not sharp? smooth crossover.
So actually, usually what happens in the single particle wave function is that so if you find this state has something pretty concentrated, then the nearby states are also having this character, right? So actually, what you will do is that you form a initial state, and then with a wave packet of those nearby eigenstates, and then you can actually see the particle just bouncing like this. Yeah. So it's not just single eigenstate like that. So the nearby state will also look like that. Yeah, well, yeah, it's a bit hard to define sharply what's that, yeah. Maybe there's some measure, but yeah, I don't know, yeah. So are there any systems like this, or like by my definition, say you have a many-body spectrum, but most of them are ergodic / thermal, but few of them are non-thermal, and then I call them quantum scarce states. So surprisingly, actually, there's one example that's analytically that's actually done by the Princeton group, Sanjay Mudaliar and Andrew Bernovic and the companies. So actually, in AKLT model, starting from ground state, you can build up these spin two magnets, and then upon summing k equals to pi superpositions, this is actually an exact eigenstate of AKLT model. And furthermore, you can actually put any number of these spin two particles, and they are actually also exact eigenstate of the AKLT model. And so what you do is that you put a finite density of the quasi particles, and then it will actually survive in the finite energy density. And since those are actually, they could use MPS technique to show that those are actually logarithmic entanglement scaling. So that's a direct proof that this AKLT model does have those scarce states that violate strong ETH, because we know if it satisfies ETH, then it has to have volume law entanglement.
It's non-integrable because of the projection.
It's non-integrable. One way to see that is that you do level spacing statistics, and then it shows Wigner-Dyson. Yeah, usually integral model shows Poisson, because you can have level crossing. So this is actually one of the example. And then another example is actually inspired by the experiment. And then it's actually going to be the system that I'm going to be focusing on today. So it's actually inspired by this experiment done in the Harvard group. And actually one of the participants, Manuel Andrews, he's in Caltech right now, and also leading a cold atom lab. So, I mean, in their work that they did lots of the thing, but one particular thing that I'm going to be focusing on is like this. So what they were doing is actually doing some kind of quantum simulators. So they prepare a chain of Rydberg atoms. At each side, you can have two local states. One is the atomic ground state, and then the second one is the Rydberg excitations. And this is the effective Hamiltonian that they're simulating. So the first term just describing the transition of the individual atoms from ground state to atomic excitation states. And then the second term is what they call the detuning laser. Basically, it acts like a chemical potential term. You're just pumping the laser so that you can excite more Rydberg atoms. The last term is the van der Waal interaction between the excitations of the Rydberg atoms, and then it actually has the 1 over distance to the 6th form. So the experiment that they, or the region that we are going to be interested in is actually in this so-called nearest neighbor Rydberg block K region. So they can tune this interaction term such that whenever you have two excitation atoms next to each other, then it has a super high energy, so it's energetically unreachable. And when you have, but when the Rydberg atoms are further apart, say larger than distance 2, then the interaction is negligible. So you can imagine some kind of Schiffer-Wolf perturbation theorem to the first order, then you will project your Hamiltonian to the low energy subspace. So right now I'm defining my problem as the following. So I will be focusing on the subspace that the Hilbert space is composed as the original 2 to the L tensor product state, but you throw out all the configuration with two ones next to each other. And then this will be my effective Hamiltonian within this Hilbert space. So there are actually some interesting fun facts about this Hilbert space. For example, in the large system size, it actually grows as some golden ratio to the system size. And there's actually some one-to-one correspondence to the fusion. The Hilbert space actually has a one-to-one correspondence to the fusion tree of the Fibonacci anions. And also actually like mu equals to 12 fifth quantum Hall state, actually, yeah. So one of the things that suggested some unusual thing about this model is actually one of the experiments that they did. So they, for example, if look at if you prepare your initial state to 1010 this charge density wave state, for example, here that they show they prepare 9 Rydberg atoms, and then you prepare the state, and at this point that you turn off the detuning laser so that this state is evolving under this Hamiltonian. And then they want to see what's happening. So for example, one of the experiments that they measure is actually this domain wall density. So the domain wall density in their definition is basically they're counting how many zero zeros, or like how many zero zero next to each other. It's a domain wall of this CDW. Yeah. So that's why they call domain wall density. And you see the dots are their experiments. They have a 9 atom and 51 atoms. And then the blue line is actually the MPS simulation. So it looks like the experiment is actually following pretty good as a simulation. Yeah. And also, this is just some, this is their MPS calculation. Just something that I want to convince you is that you see these oscillations, and then the dashed line is calculating basically by this Hamiltonian subject to the constraint Hilbert space. And then the solid lines is you really put back those 1 to the R6 interaction. But at least that the oscillation looks like it's just damping faster. So there's probably just some quantitative difference, and then there's probably no qualitative difference. So I just want to convince you that looking at this model plus that constraint subspace is a okay thing to study first. So that was starting from this Z2 state. But actually what's interesting is that, so here that they only did the MPS calculation instead of the experiment, is that if you prepare the initial state instead of the CDW, you prepare all the uniform states, then you actually see different thermalization behaviors. For example, the red lines are the uniform states. Then in the constraint Hilbert Hamiltonian, you see very some oscillation, but they just deface very quickly and then reach this line. And this line is actually pretty close to the expectation value if you evaluate from thermal ensemble. However, if you're starting from 1010, it has these strong oscillations, and then the oscillation frequency is actually roughly square root 2 omega. But if you see the like the average value, the average value of the oscillation, it actually has some discrepancy between this value. And actually these two states are at the same energy density. So if ETH is true, you should expect that these two thermalization values should be the same, and then being predicted by the Gibbs ensemble or microcanonical ensemble. So this already hinting something is weird about this model or this system. And again, that if you really put the 1 over R to the 6th back, then it's just the oscillation damps faster, but there are still something that you see, at least up to this time, that it's different. Yeah. And also another thing they calculate is that you can calculate the entanglement entropy, and then you actually see the linear growing initially. So that's just something tells you that this is not many body localization, because if it's many body localization, then the entanglement will actually grow logarithmically in the initial time instead of linearly. Yeah. So this has to be already suggesting something new, not MBL, but also not quite ETH either. So right now, let me just define my problem more sharply. So the model that we were talking about, constraint in the Hilbert space, there's only one energy scale. So I just said that basically take omega equals to 2, so that energy scales to 1. And then again, the Hamiltonian is basically just describing the transition of the Rydberg atoms subject to the constraint. So you can put these gadgets around so to make sure that your Hamiltonian doesn't take you out of the Hilbert space. So this is now people call the PXP model. So this will become the model that I'm going to be interested in. This model actually has some interesting properties. For example, the first thing is that if you put it on PBC, then it has translation symmetry. And then it also has this inversion symmetry. Also that you can define a particle Hall transformation, this. And because this particle transformation anti-commute with the Hamiltonian. So whenever you have a positive energy eigenstate, you can operate that state with this operator and then give you a new eigenstate, and that has the negative energy. Yeah. Another interesting property is that the combination of these two symmetries, the combination of these two actually gives you exponentially many zero energy eigenstates. And for example, that you can count this by formulating the problem as a Hopping problem on a graph. Then you can identify there's a bipartite lattice, and then there's some theorem to count how many zero states. And there's another way, which is actually basically by calculating some analogous to Witten index in supersymmetry, that you can also get a lower bound of the eigenstates. And yeah, this is just a schematic thing to show you this. So these are the property of this Hamiltonian. And there's actually a recent work by Vedika Kamani and Chris Lohmann and Anisha Chandran that they add some perturbation terms and then they examine the level spacing statistics. But they actually saw that when you add some perturbations, it looks like that the level spacing looks more like Poisson instead of Wigner. So they're suggesting that this model may be close by as some deformation of some integrable model. But this model itself actually is actually non-integrable, that people already did the level spacing statistics, and it actually showed when you increase the system size, it actually looks like it's flowing to Victor Dyson. Yeah. So just a recap that whenever you have a quantum dynamics problem, and then if you can solve all the eigenstates, then this is how you calculate that exactly. So the first thing that you can examine is that, then let me see if the initial state actually has some, how does it distribute among the eigenstates, right? So you can calculate the overlap of your initial state to the eigenstates. So what you saw is actually something weird. So you actually see that, for example, if you take your initial CDW or the Z2 state and then see what's the distribution of that onto the eigenstates, you actually see these special towers. And then there are these very high, unusual high overlaps with some very special states, and then also the towers of the states. And then the towers are actually having almost equal energy spacing. And actually the experiment, what you saw, the frequency is actually corresponding to twice of this spacing. The reason is that actually that these towers that I'm not showing here, but these towers actually have different inversion quantum numbers, but the observables that you use in the experiment doesn't change the inversion quantum number. So they're actually connecting one and two, like every two towers. So that, but the frequency is actually pretty close. Yeah. So this is actually already something non-generic. So what you would actually expect to see for generic model is that when you have any initial state, you expand in the eigenenergy, then you should see some, everything is being sampled unbiasedly. And then it's sent, the distribution is centered around the average energy with energy fluctuation or energy standard deviation scales at square root L. But you wouldn't expect to see something like this. Second thing that you can check is that you can calculate the entanglement entropy for all the eigenstates, and then see that this is the calculation that I've done only in L equals to 16, but I scale the subsystem size from 2 to 8, and then most of the states are scaled almost like linearly with respect to subsystem size. But look at these special dots. So the green is subsystem size 4, red is subsystem size 6, and blue is subsystem size 8. And they actually scales almost like area law. I don't know if you can see this, yeah. So there are these states, and those states actually corresponding to these highest overlapping states. So yeah, actually, these figures are firstly done by this group of people, and then they were the first one trying to draw some connection to the scarcity or coined this term here.
What about the lower band of states?
This one? Yeah, this is just because the subsystem size is just too small. So this is not really the best way to see this, but I just want to show you some of the subsystem scaling. So actually, for example, Christopher Turner, that they actually did a more systematic and then larger scale scaling. So here that they are looking at those special eigenstates. For example, these two states, and then FSA is just there, one of the approximation scheme that they are trying to use to approximate those exact eigenstates. So let's look at the exact. So what they are looking is that the subsystem size is half of the chain. And then they calculate the entanglement scaling and then see how it scales as system size. And it looks like that they, at least this part, it looks like that they're suggesting, numerically it's suggesting logarithmic entanglement scaling instead of volume law. Lezik and I had some problem about what's happening this part. They had some weird explanation, but let's forget about this. But at least this part is suggesting that it's logarithmic. But these are the numerical work done by Christopher Turner and companies. So recently they also did the test about diagonal ETH. So you can calculate some local observables and then see how they scale as system size. Again, that if ETH is true, you should expect everything will converge to this line as you increase the system size, because that's actually, basically that's the hypothesis. But you see that these special states looks like that they are outliers. And then when you increase the system size, looks like they don't converge to this line. So up to here, these numerical results already suggesting there might be something like, most of the states are probably ETH, but these special eigenstates are probably non-ETH. So what Lezik and I did is that on that PXP model, we really exactly found some of the eigenstates that we can analytically write down. And then using matrix product state, and then because those are matrix product state, it's already, at finite energy density, and you already immediately show that they won't have volume law entanglement, and then those are really the state they also don't satisfy ETH. So in periodic boundary conditions, we found two of the state at E equals to zero, and again that they are more efficiently represented as a matrix product state. So, but if you are not familiar with matrix product state, it is a many-body wave function, but the coefficient is so special that you can use a certain rule. Basically, for example, that if you want to calculate the coefficient of 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, then what you do is that you take this B0 matrix times C0 matrix and times B0 matrix, and then all the way up to C sigma L. And then you take trace of that. That value is the coefficient of your many-body wave function. And then you can do that for, say, 0, 1, 0, 0, 0, or any other thing. So, and also these actually only exist for even number of L. I don't know if it helps, but if you really write out, for example, for L equals to A, then this is what wave function looks like. These are the coefficients, and these are the configurations, but they do have some structure, but again, the structure is actually most efficient encoded as matrix product state. So this is the sketch of the proof, but it's more of a proof that it's more of a proof that I know how to prove this thing. So I'm not trying to make you understand the proof. But something I should mention is that in the paper that we posted, we proved this thing by showing the energy variance of these states are zero, so they are eigenstates. But shortly after I posted the paper, that actually we found out a way to show directly that H phi equals to E phi and E is zero. Yeah. But another thing I should stress is that the reason why they are eigenstates are not the same reason why AKLT ground state is an eigenstate. So for AKLT states, for AKLT state, it's an eigenstate because the local projectors of AKLT, it's an eigenstate of, sorry, the AKLT ground state is actually an eigenstate of all the local projector in your AKLT model. So each local term actually annihilates the AKLT ground state. But in this case, first of all, this is actually at infinite temperature, finite energy density. And the local term of your PXC Hamiltonian actually gives you some non-zero state. That state actually can be written as some excitation at site J and excitation at site J plus one. Minus the same state, and then you shift it one. So after you have this, and then you sum over all the J, so you form this Planck wave superposition, and everything just cancels out, so it gives you zero. So that's the reason why it's an eigenstate. So it's a different reason. Yeah.
So you mentioned it only works for even number of sites.
Yeah, so that's why these actually only exist in what was the question?
What happened if you have odd numbers?
So those are not, then these won't be exact eigenstates, but...
because they don't cancel.
Yeah.
You need even number of sites to define that constraint Hilbert space.
For PPC, that's true. For PPC, you don't need that, but you need even site to define Z2. So there are actually some very interesting property about those two states. So first of all is that those two states actually breaks translation symmetry. So one thing you can see is already from the pattern of the MPS representation. The second one is basically the first one shifted by one site. But you actually cannot detect this translation symmetry by any one side observables. For example, if you calculate the one side reduced density matrix of both states in thermodynamic limit, they give you this form. Another interesting thing is that if you calculate the Ripper excitation number of those two states, and it actually gives you 1/3. On the other hand, if you predict this observable using canonical ensemble, then they actually give you this funny value, which is not 1/3. So that's another direct demonstration that these two eigenstates doesn't satisfy ETH. However, the translation symmetry breaking can be detected by these observables. And so it's basically the picture of these two states are more like a valence bound state with more entanglement, or some kind of Majorana gauge, but with more entanglement on top of that. Also, this is just some showing that they actually have some what's the, this is actually their inversion symmetry quantum numbers. So the quantum number actually depends on the system size. And even though particle transformation is not a quantum, it's not a symmetry of the Hamiltonian, these two states happen to be an eigenstate of the particle transformation operation. And this is again more of a proof that I know how to show you this. But the general idea is that you can operate your symmetry operation on your eigenstate, and then you can find a gauge transformation so that your new state is something. You can find a gauge transformation to map this state to your original state up to a sign. So that's the idea of that. Again, this is for particle transformation. So a common feedback I got from people is that, you have an exponentially many degenerate state, and then it seems like an intuitive thing that you can get any low entanglement state, so maybe you're lucky. But so it turns out that in open boundary condition, we also have two exact eigenstates at square root 2 and negative square root 2. And those are non-degenerate. And those, and then again, so in OBC, these two are really not satisfying ETH. And the interesting thing is that in OBC, the bulk of the, these exact eigenstates can be still be efficiently expressed as MPS. And then the bulk part is the same as the PBC part. They're just differed by the boundary terminations. By changing this four boundary terminations, we get this four eigenstate, two with E equals to zero, and the other two, one with square root two energy, the other one with negative square root two energy.
Excuse me.
Yes.
If the change occurs only in the boundary, how does energy change extensively? Because you say that.
Oh. So it's only order one away from zero, right?
But per site, right?
No, it's not per site. It's not per site.
Total energy is.
Yeah, it's total energy. Yeah. But the PBC is already at finite energy density, so it's already in the middle of the spectrum, and then you have excitation, so it's just order one number away.
But it's extensive. Okay.
Again, it's a proof of I know. But the interesting thing is that if you examine the energy density of these four eigenstates, then actually you can see that in the bulk that it's basically zero energy, but around the boundary, you can actually associate some kind of square root 2 over 2 energy lump or minus square root 2 over 2 energy lump around the edge. So there actually can be understood as some kind of edge excitations with exponentially localized around the edge with decay length 2 log 3 sites. And then this is just some symmetry properties about those four states, and it's actually not that important at this point, actually. Yeah. So also just a recap that right now we have four in OBC. Two of them is buried in this E equals to zero degenerate manifold, and then the other two is actually at these two positions. Again, that here I'm just showing that when you take Z2 and overlap with the eigenstate, you get these weird scar towers. So and then you actually see that, those two exactly have square root 2 energy. They are having very close energy to the scar state, the position of the scar state. So in a sense, that's why it actually got us to think about, maybe those scar state can be understood as some kind of quasi-particle excitation if we can somehow put the excitation in the bulk. Because this edge excitation is suggesting that that's the energy at least looks like it. So that's what inspired the following thing. So it's a bit unfortunate that unlike AKLT model, you can do this thing exactly, but here that we can only do approximation. So again, this is just telling you that those Z2 overlap actually have different quantum numbers. They have different, the red ones have momentum sector zero and quantum number plus one, and the blue ones have momentum pi and inversion quantum number, negative one. So to capture those scalar wave functions in PPC away from E equals to zero, I wrote down a quasi-particle wave function or so-called single mode approximation. So basically what I do is that I replace one BC with this M matrix, and then this M matrix is chosen such that the variational parameters is like this, so that it's in the correct symmetry sectors that I want to capture. And then because this is a symmetry breaking state, to get in the correct momentum quantum number state, I have to form this superposition to get the right ansatz. Okay, so this is a two variational parameter wave function. This is the variational wave function, and then these two other parameters. The way that I obtain the optimized wave function is by minimizing the variance. So I don't really target any energy. I just want to make it as close to an eigenstate as possible. So what's surprising is that when you get this wave function and then you calculate the overlap with all the eigenstate, it actually picks up one of the state, and it's actually that that scalar state with a very high overlap. That's almost like, it's actually 82%. Yeah. So I can also do the same thing, but trying to capture the next one, but it's with a different inversion quantum number. And then, so I have to choose my my SMA with a different variational parameter such that it's in the correct quantum number sector. And it's a one parameter variational wave function. And again, it has some overlap, but right now it's only 53%.
How does the overlap change with system size?
It's gonna be exponentially dropping because it's a many body wave function. Yeah.
Also, when you compare to the many body full spectrum, this will collapse in the thermodynamic limit.
So, yes. So, actually, the interesting thing is that. There's going to be exponentially many states, so the overlap will decrease. But actually, the variance of the variational wave function stays order one, even in thermodynamic limit, yeah, instead of square root L. Yeah. That's at least something already different. Yeah. I'll tell you about this if I have time. So actually, that was like just putting one particle, but those almost equal spacing energies are suggesting that, oh, if you can put more particles, then maybe that's the correct picture. So what I did is that I just take the M matrix that I got from that one particle sectors, and then I write down these wave functions, and then I'm just summing over all the positions with no repeating I's. So I don't want to worry about what happened when two quasi-particles are on top of each other. So it's kind of some kind of non-interacting scattering states. And again, that this is a symmetry breaking state, and then I have to form to make it in the correct symmetry sector. What's surprising is that this is the one particle part, and then when you have two particle wave function, again, I'm calculating the variational wave function overlap with eigenstate. It actually even gets better up to half filling, and then it drops back again. So it's actually surprising that, so at least that from this picture, in finite size, that these special low entanglement state have some physical picture that they look like some quasi-particle excitation on top of the vacuum state that we found. Yeah. But if you really calculate the energy variance, the variance actually goes up, even though the overlap is going up. So, So actually right now, Lezik and I, are doing is that that picture is, at least it's pretty good in finite size, but can we say something in thermodynamic limit? Because again, that as you said, that when you increase the system size, it's a many body wave function. It's the overlap is going to drag down exponentially. Because this is not a ground state or low energy excitation problem. When you talk about variational wave function. What do you mean you're approximating some eigenstate? So that's something that we're working on. So we're actually having some preliminary procedures. See, for example, if we can, one thing that we are trying to do is that you can actually increase the size of this block. You can actually do this thing in very large system size, calculating this thing, and then even actually in thermodynamic limit. And then if you can increase your block size, then see, can you actually get a convergent energy variance? For example, if somehow that procedure gives you energy variance converged to zero when m goes large, then you can say you're obtaining some kind of asymptotic exact eigenstate or something like that. But we're still trying to figure out if we can actually use this quasi-particle picture to say something or give some argument more rigorously about non-ETH behavior in thermodynamic limit. Yeah, but at least that at finite size, this quasi-particle picture looks like pretty good. And actually, yeah, so these are actually some new discoveries that starting from last year. So there are still lots of questions that people are looking at and then asking, and it's I think this is gonna be a promising direction and promising field. And then yeah, lastly that I need to thank my advisor and also Manuel that he introduces us this problem, and also I had some discussions with my friends in Caltech. Yeah, and thank you for your attention. Yes.
I guess APLT and this PXP model, they both involve local projectors.
Local projector.
Yeah, APLT is projecting out spin tube.
Yeah.
So would you say that, maybe a generic model that's defined using local projectors might have these scar states? Like is this a generic feature of this type of model or?
I don't know. I think people should try this thing and then see if that's actually the case. Actually, that's still a big question. Like, what's the criterion that you can have those scar states? No one knows yet. Yeah.
Along that line, during your conversation, you mentioned that you can transform your MPS into AKLT.
Yeah.
We know that AKLT has a string order.
Yeah.
So does your system also have string order?
So yeah, the analogous string order is that. So in AKLT model, the string order is given by, you can have some plus and then but you cannot have plus, right? You cannot have plus something or plus or minus something minus.
Sequence order.
Yeah. So in this case, that it's easier to see this when you block two Ripper degrees of freedom. So I'll call 00 as O, and then 01 as R, and 10 is L. So we know by Ripper constraint, you cannot have L followed by R, R followed by L, but you can have L followed by R. But the special state we have has the quote unquote string order is that you cannot have R and L or L, R.
You can identify a string order.
Yeah. Yes.
So your PXP model, is it translation invariant?
If it's on PBC, it's translation invariant.
Okay. So, but then the state you had was not translation invariant.
The state I have, yeah.
Right. So is it part of some manifold of states of the same energy?
Well, they are degenerate. So what you actually need to do is that you have to form the correct, you have to form the superposition such that they're in the correct, in different quantum numbers, the translation quantum number sectors, right? Yeah. Yes.
Maybe a related question. So, how important exactly are those?
Yeah, that's a good question. So, we can actually sorry, we can actually write down a model that doesn't have this particle Hall transformation, so that it doesn't have this E equals to zero degeneracy, but one of our exact state in PPCs is still an exact eigenstate at finite energy density. Yeah. But that still has inversion symmetry. I don't know if we can write out some model without inversion symmetry. Yeah. But that's one.
Is that more about solvability, or is that more about defining the notion of SCAR?
Oh, defining the notion, you don't have that. By my definition, the definition of SCAR state is that it's non-thermal state, but other states are thermal. Yeah, yeah. You don't have to be in the symmetry.
More like you need those to probably solve
it. Yeah, maybe. But it's still not that clear to us. And also, maybe some related answer is that are those protected by symmetries? But we can actually writing out some model that we have a family of, we have a parameters that we can tune, and then all the parameters, they looks like they it has those SCAR states, but they are still talking to other states, meaning that it's not protected by some symmetries. When you crank up this thing, you can look at that if the levels are just crossing each other or avoided crossing. But it looks like that they all have avoided level crossing, but somehow something is still protecting the low entanglement state. So that's something actually we're trying to figure out right now. That's a very unexpected thing, but we're still trying to, I can give you actually a bit more our intuition right now, why that might be happening later. Yeah, I probably cannot say that in 30 seconds, yeah. Or any, yeah.
David, question. Is the ground state of this PXP model trivial?
What do you mean by trivial?
Of Rydberg excitation?
No.
What is the ground state?
It's some MPS state, but you cannot represent it using finite bound dimension. It's a generic gapped ground state.
But it's a non-trivial state.
It's not trivial. It's not trivial.
And you said earlier it's not a frustration free, right?
No.
Okay, let's language change here.